is Sound Effects, a radio playground, a compendium of radio theater, comedy, and the audio arts, with your host, Jerry Stern. Good evening. This is Sound Effects, a radio playground where we bring you modern audio theater. See, radio play is the important part of that phrase. I'm your host, Jerry Stearns, reminding you that wherever you go, there you are. Tonight we're going to begin a two-part piece called In the Embers. It's by the local group called the Great Northern Audio Theater. But before we do that, I'm also have in the studio with me Jackie Maddox, better known to KFAI folks as Lady J.
That's right.
And she has a blues show elsewhere on the dial. We'll let her talk about that. And I'm hoping that I also have Robin Miles on the line from New York.
Yes, you do, and I'm so happy to be here. Thank you.
Aha. Oh, we're awful glad to have you here, too. And we're going to talk about the making of In the Embers before we begin playing you Act One of it. We'll begin the Act One about, well, just after the top of the hour. So a couple of minutes after 10 o'clock, you'll hear the first part of In the Embers and then the completion of it next week, right here on Sound Effects. I'm going to talk a little bit about Robin because Robin is the only actor who is in this piece that is not from the Twin Cities. You living in New York, and you're an actress there, among other things, and you have some 200-something audiobooks to your credit now? Is that right?
Oh, my goodness. And you're dating me. Yes. I think I'm at about 350 now.
Wow.
But honestly, I think I've lost count. I stopped making notches on my belt. I'm just really pleased when I get great titles to do, challenging titles to do, important titles to do. It thrills me.
I'm sure that it thrills a whole lot of people who are listening to them too, because otherwise you wouldn't be asked back to do them over and over again like that.
Well, it's very gratifying to get positive feedback from people who say they're listening to a book of mine and it transported them or it elevated it to another level. I live to be able to do that. Give somebody a great performance experience.
I think it's your voice, Robin. I'm sitting here listening to it, and this is Jackie, who plays your younger sister in the Embers, and your voice is transporting.
Darling. How are you, my dear?
Hi, sis. How are you?
I'm pleased to be able to introduce you to for the first time here. Let's see. Jackie plays your sister later on in her life. That is known as
right.
Old Alice
later
in the script.
Later on in the piece and later on in the... And you actually play my daughter at a later point.
Because
my daughter plays my sister, you, when you're younger.
Absolutely, absolutely. But I'm old Alice. It was a good script. It was really a wonderful thing to do. I enjoyed the idea behind the whole thing, and it made me feel really good after I got through playing the part.
I had the same experience. I felt that it was timely. It was creative. It satisfied me on a lot of different levels. Because I'm a sci-fi head. I'm a geek nerd. That's me. Love it. But there, because of the historical quality of it I can't say, if I say anything, it'll be a spoiler.
So I know. It's like, what do we say that doesn't spoil the piece for anyone? But I can say that it concerns...
Exactly. It satisfies on many levels, on the creative level, the scientific level, and the historical.
And the metaphysical level, too. And I don't think that's a spoiler. It satisfies on that level, too.
Right.
I am pleased to hear you guys talk about it that way. I think it is necessary that I give full disclosure here, because I have to say that I had something to do with the production of this piece as a writer and a producer, and in fact as the recording engineer of this. So just so everybody knows that, you know, it's out there and they're going to be able to hear the first part of it tonight and the second part of it next week. So if some of what we talk about doesn't make a whole lot of sense, well, that means you have to stay around and listen to it to find out what the story's about.
But perhaps, Jerry, you might want to give them some idea, because we're saying In the Embers, but they don't know what we're referring to.
Well, okay. In the Embers is, it begins with an urban archaeologist who is called in because they discover some artifacts in a construction site, and in the one of the things they discover is an old barn that's been burned out. And Digger is his name, his nickname, Digger the archaeologist, is able to take some wood from this old burned-out barn and use a laser to read in the grooves of the charcoal. And he is able to read what's there, and he finds voices. He can use the laser and the computer to translate it into sound from the grooves, just like it's reading a record. That gets him started on figuring out who these people are, whose voices he hears, and he gathers all this information and puts it all on his laptop computer. And one day the computer starts talking back to him, and he finds this character whose voice is on there is now living on his computer. It's Kit Jeffers, who was a jazz singer from the 1920s and is suddenly alive again. And the story goes on from there, with Kit discovering a whole lot of things about modern life that she would never have learned in the 1920s, because she's seeing it from the inside of a computer, which is one of the interesting parts for me was figuring out how to make what the inside of a computer sounded like, because we hear some of the story from Kit's point of view.
Which is, what is so wonderful about the story is that Kit's the protagonist. She's also the person that the listener follows through the whole story. Plus, she's the heroine of the story as well. And that is who Robert Miles plays in the audio. I guess you'd call it an audio play.
It is.
And that's Robin in New York. She is Kit Jeffers. And she comes back from the 1920s into modern times, and that's the subject of the whole story right there, without spoiling it.
A grave injustice is discovered. I think that's probably sufficient without giving anything away.
Well, one of the things that I think was so marvelous about the play was the tunes, were the records, the tunes that were created specifically for this project. And I complimented Brian Price and Jerry Stearns on the writing of the tunes. I'm a blues DJ here at KFAI, and I was just taken by the music. It sounds so very much like something that would have happened in the 1920s. the tunes are very authentic, and your voice singing the tunes, Robin, you sound just like a early Billie Holiday or Sippy Wallace.
Goodness,
or
I'm humbled. I don't know if I can live up to that compliment, but I am honored, and I will take it. And all I can say is, my father was a jazz musician, and I grew up with jazz. I played flute, saxophone, and bassoon when I was growing up, and I sang jazz. My first solo was in seventh grade, and I sang Sentimental Journey with the jazz band in my school. I love singing jazz, and I've had this great luck in the audiobook industry to have projects come my way that just happen to require that the narrator sing. And with great luck, I have gotten to sing music from this time period, or written to reflect the style of the time period, the 20s. And I love 20s jazz.
No wonder.
Particularly big band jazz.
No wonder. It's so authentic.
For me, it's thrilling.
Yeah, you sound just like those ladies from those days. And it's not just the wording, it's your inflection, it's your the way you the pauses that you take. The music is just very, very authentic, and that's what makes us feel that we are living in the story. Because when something's audio and you're not, you know, flipping the pages of the book and you're reading it, everything's going into your senses, into your hearing, and you are transported into the story, and a lot of it is Kit Jeffers' voice. It takes you right there immediately.
I'll have to step in and say that the songs, I really like them. I think they're marvelous. Thank you guys for that. But Brian Price, my partner in Great Northern Audio, wrote the lyrics for it. And his old friend Mike Wheaton was the musician who created the melodies and the instrumentation for them that you hear on there. The play will have the songs in it. There are three original songs that are in it. But you won't hear them all the way through all the time because, you know, they're part of the story. They're not just there. But they are available. You can go to the website and find the songs.
So. Well, your audience is probably being quizzical because they're like, well, what does that have to do with the story? Well, Digger finds out more. He just falls in love with Kit Jeffers, actually, in the story, and he finds out more about her, and he stumbles across some old music of hers from the 1920s, and that's where this original music that was written in these days in 2015, but it sounds just like the 1920s, and when you hear those tunes, you understand why he has fallen in love with her. Because in the story, Digger has a girlfriend, and she's starting to get a little jealous because of the attention that Digger has started to suddenly give to his computer, because here is Kit Jeffers alive and in the computer.
I've heard this thing over and over many, many, many times, and there's at least three places in it where there's a scene that ends up with Digger and Kit talking, and I still cry every time I hear them. I won't tell you what they are now because you'll end up crying when you get to that point yourself.
Well, I want to ask you something, Robin, because what made me really kind of resonate with the material was that it seems so authentic. The script is written by someone who is not an African-American person, and it would have been very easy for someone to slip into a caricature of what black people were like. You know, some kind of a Norman Lear 1970s sitcom black person. But they did not, and it stayed very dignified. It stayed very authentic, and just from, you know, my parents, my mother, my aunts, and some of the older black women that I have been around, especially the old blues ladies, the dialogue is very authentic, and it rings very true. And I was wondering if you felt that way, too.
I did. I do. I shouldn't use the past tense, present tense. I remember, though, we really did go through the script scene by scene, and this is where sort of reality meets imagination. There's a scene in which Kit discovers that her she doesn't know where her physical presence is. She can't locate herself. It's dark. And when she discovers, she hears the voice, and she sees there's this white man on the other side of whatever this physical space is, and it is a terrifying realization that she's essentially trapped somewhere by a white man at this time period. And that was the only thing I think we really delved into, pulled apart, and there was a rewrite done, because my instinct was I didn't have the words yet to express the depth of my fear and the panic in the scene. And of course, it required that a person of color read it through in the imaginary, put yourself in the situation sense,
mm-hmm.
To help find the truth of that moment.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you could do that when you're just writing it. It did require, I think, the mouth of a live actor and a live actor of color.
Mm-hmm.
To provide that,
yes,
the deftness of the moment. That's right.
Yes, that's true. You told us about it, and we looked at each other and said, "I have no idea how to deal with that." And we talked about how we were going to deal with it, and decided that guess what, Digger doesn't know how to deal with it either.
Either no.
And that's exactly
that's
what he says.
Too.
Yeah. So that's exactly what he says is I don't know how to do this.
But see, that's what I mean. It's real, because he would have been freaked out, because he's living in modern times in the relationship with black people. He would not have known that her only experience was from the 1920s, and especially the experience that burned her barn down.
Ah.
Yeah.
So we suddenly give him something away there. It's her barn.
Well, it's sort of hers. It's something she would have been familiar with, and the experience that came in that made that happen, she would have been terrified to see this white man having her trapped.
Ooh, getting spooky, folks.
Well, it also came out of a bit of improv, and I always find, as an actor, when you run into a not sure which way to go situation, sometimes doing an improv is exactly right. It's the way to find the way out of something, the way to something. I say out of, I really mean to, the truth of a situation.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what happened for us. And I think that the scene now plays really well, now that we've had our hands on it.
Well, I recognize that your hand was there on that scene as well. Jerry told me about the difficulty, how it felt awkward, and you kind of straightened it out. I was like, I see. That makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Just to remind folks, you're listening to Sound Effects, a Radio Playground here on Fresh Air. We're talking to Jackie Maddox, Lady J, and Robin Miles about their parts in The Embers, an audio play which we're going to begin in a little while.
Well, I haven't said much about my part in the story, because actually that's the spoiler. So I'm just saying that I'm old Alice, and I really enjoyed the role. I enjoyed the part, and I kind of drew from my aunts and my mother and some of the really strong African-American women I grew up with, and I use their cadence and how they would have spoken, especially in these modern times. But I don't want to say much more than that, because that tells they'll give too much away, I think.
Boy, that's hard, isn't
it? It's hard, isn't it, when you have something that you so want to say something about, but you don't want to ruin the experience for people who are going to listen.
And especially since old Alice doesn't show up until the second part.
Yes.
Of the story.
Right.
So, and it's very important that she's there, but we can't tell you much more than that.
So the first part we'll hear tonight, roughly 27 minutes or something of it, and then there'll be another 50 some next week. So it'll take the whole hour show next week here. That will be December the 11th for those of you who are tuning in. This is the December 4th version of Sound Effects, and the December 11th show will have it. The archives will be up there for 2 weeks, so if you are just hearing this one a little later tonight or tomorrow, you know, you have to wait a week. But even if you only catch the second one, you can always go back and pick this one up later. That's at kfai.org. And the show is called Sound Effects, a Radio Playground.
Say, Jerry, since it's out on disc, like a CD disc, is it possible that someone can just get it from you in its entirety? Because it is a produced project, because I'm looking at it right now with a picture and shrink wrap and everything.
If you go to the KFA, to greatnorthernaudio.com, there's in fact the picture cover right on the front page right now. And look under productions. There is a page just about this production, and it has links to places where you can go and get it. And it's available on CD here in the Twin Cities. In fact, it's available on CD only here in the Twin Cities at the science fiction bookstores.
Did you want to send a shout out to some of the other actors, the other voice actors?
That's a good idea. I should mention some of the other people who are in it because they're all Twin Cities actors. Digger Morgan himself is played by Edwin Strout, who is well known in Twin Cities theater scene. Don Krasnowski, my old friend Don, is in here. She's Digger's girlfriend, Susan. Suzanne Becker, Gordon Smooter, the puppeteer. Tom Joyal and Charlie Meitzner and Dean Johnson all have little parts in it. I don't know how little, but important parts in it. And even KFAI's own E.G. Bailey, who used to have a show right after this one, has a part that most people wouldn't even recognize because he does such a good job of being somebody that he ain't.
And we can't tell you much more than that either about his part, because that would be a spoiler alert, too.
Oh, yes. Oh, and
so
Olivia.
I will add one thing.
Yes.
I'll add one name to it, and that's I was working by myself out in New York, and I felt very cut off. It's tough sometimes doing audio drama remotely, and I've done a number of pieces where, you know, my co-star was doing a television show, and I couldn't do any of my scenes with him. And in this case, I wasn't able to be in the same room with the other actors. But I did have a great engineer working with me in New York City. His name is Paul Pontius. He has a music and a jazz background, so it was a kind of a perfect storm for me in New York. He was helping me with recording and also working Skype via director, but also was really great helping me with the music in the studio, playing it through the studio speakers and then into the booth that I was in as the different musical changes came through. So I was lucky. I think that's the only reason why I was able to do this successfully, because working on my own would not have worked. So shout out to Paul Pontius.
There you go. This is
Thank
the kind
you.
Of project yeah, that involves so many different people. How long did it take you, Jerry?
From the time we started basic thinking about it, driving around in the car, driving across Missouri and Illinois in a thunderstorm one night, from that time when we started it until we got the CDs in our hands was 2 years.
Wow. And all the people in between that helped you move it along and progress it.
Oh, yeah. Lots and lots of them. Now, Robin mentioned something about the production not being able to be here with us in the studio, and we've only got 3 or 4 minutes left here, so I'll just bring this up briefly, but we recorded some of the scenes, in fact, all of the scenes between Robin as Kit on the computer and digger whose computer it is, they're talking to each other pretty much by themselves. We wanted them to be able to talk to each other, but they're not in the same city. So we set up a Skype interview there and recorded Robin in New York and Edwin in my office at the same time, so they could work off each other and be able to respond as actors like to respond. And Brian Price, who was directing them, was in Indianapolis. He was part of the Skype conversation, and he directed them from there. So it was recorded in three different cities at the same time and then added together and mixed later.
Wow, what a project.
I had forgotten about that. I forgot completely that Brian was not with me or you, but was in a third location.
Wow.
It's amazing what we're able to do with technology. It allows us to do this kind of stuff.
And Skype is kind of like Kit being in the computer in any ways.
Yeah.
I mean, it kind of worked just the way the storyline went. So
yeah.
That's probably even better.
I supported the telling of the story because we didn't violate the physical reality of the storytelling, which was we were not actually in the same room.
Right, right, right. Very good. Wow.
Ooh, so that's kind of cosmic, isn't it?
Very cosmic.
Metaphysical. Cool.
And so now
again,
you have...
Again, I want to say something else, but I don't want to give away the story.
there's one other that we should mention as an mm-hmm. actor, and that is... Robin's daughter, Olivia.
Little Alice.
Yes.
Or young Alice.
Yeah, she plays in two places, in the recordings that Digger gets off the wood and in a song that you did together that Digger manages.
We sing Amazing Grace together.
Yes, yes. And it is so, I hate to say it, is so cute. It is so...
It's poignant.
Yes.
It's very, very...
Poignant. That's exactly right.
It really nails home the concept of what is going on in the embers. It does. And even though in the storyline, it's supposed to be two sisters, and in reality, it's mother and daughter, but you can still hear the similarities enough in the voice that it just nails...
Oh, that's great. I can't hear it because I'm too close to it.
For sure.
But this is also not the first time mother and daughter have performed together. We've done, Olivia plays a 10-year-old superhero in Molly Danger.
Oh.
Whoa.
Molly Danger is by Jamal Igel. It's a comic. Audio comic.
Yeah.
And at 10 years old, she played the 10-year-old. And, of course, I played her commander.
There you go. No wonder you guys work so well together in the embers, because you can tell it.
I seem to recall that I played that on the show here once some years ago when it first came out. So
terrific.
So somebody out there may have heard it. Well, I'm sorry to say that we must take our leave here of Jackie and Robin, because we want to go in and play them the first act of In the Embers.
Very nice meeting you, Robin.
It was great to meet you, finally.
Yeah, absolutely. Maybe we might actually meet face-to-face one day.
One day.
I'm going to look for you next time I'm there, which will be in May.
Please do. Please,
in May.
Please look me up.
I will.
Okay, excellent.
Thanks for having me, Jerry.
Thank you for being around.
My pleasure.
You're listening to Sound Effects, a radio playground, and...
From atop the formerly tallest building in downtown Minneapolis, you are tuned to 900 Red Hot Watts Community Radio, KFAI, 90.3 FM in Minneapolis, 106.7 FM in St. Paul, and on the web at KFAI.org. Radio without boundaries! Smoking!
Hold on.